Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. Today, I want to discuss a very important subject with you, rooted in the Torah portion and in the Besorah portion. And I want to begin by talking about Jacob in this very special experience that he has when he, you recall from last week, he had to get out of town fast because his brother Esau was so angry at him that he threatened to take his life. And so Rebekah, his mother, said, listen, you better get out now. Go to our family, and I'll work on this at this end, and hopefully I can get your brother not to be quite so angry at you. So Jacob leaves home, and there he is. He heads north. He's in the Negev. He heads north, a few miles north of Jerusalem. He stops at a place which had become known as Beth-El. This is all part of the Parsha, but not the section that we read this morning. So there he is, and he is at Beth-El, and he's in what we would call, this is a sociological term, liminal space. Liminal. It means to be between two worlds, if you will. No man's land. Stuck in the middle, but not really connected to either. So he had left home, and the danger of Esau, and he is between that, and he'll see the danger that his uncle Laban presents to him later on. So he is in liminal space, and at that point, God gives him a fabulous dream. And you know the dream. I'm not going to read the passage, but he dreams that he sees a ladder, and the ladder touches the ground, obviously, but then goes up into heaven, the abode of God, and angels are ascending and descending on the ladder. And in the dream, hears the voice of God, and God says to him the following, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham, and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. And your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south, and all peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you, and I will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to the land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. So here what we have are some very encouraging words, reminding him that he's not alone. And God reiterates the promise that he had made to his grandfather, Abraham, years and years ago. But here's the interesting thing. When he does finally return 22 years later, he does not become owner of the land. It doesn't happen. Up until that point, the only ownership of the land was a cave that his grandpa had bought from the local peoples so he could bury Sarah, his wife, in a respectful way. And so the cave of Machpelah is the only real property that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob own in Israel. But what we see here is the beginning of a very long process. And keep that phrase, a very long process, in mind. Because even today, in a very real sense, the promise has not been completely fulfilled in Israel. Israel, a wonderful country in many ways, in some ways, Israel acts like other countries act. It is not the wonderful, ideal place with God dwelling in the midst and everyone keeping Torah. As a matter of fact, on Yom Kippur, A lot of Jews are on the beach in Tel Aviv, almost as a statement of rejection of the biblical tradition. Very interesting about countries. My son David, who to me is something of a sage, yeah, no kidding, I feel that way. David made a comment to me that he doesn't remember making, but I remember it very vividly. He said, you know, we were talking about geopolitics or whatever, and he said, for a country, you can be powerful, but you can't be powerful and really good. Power and real goodness don't mix real well. You can be good and not powerful. You can be powerful and not good. And I thought that it was a very perceptive comment and reminds us that things are not exactly as they should be and that the promises have yet to be completely fulfilled. And let me say parenthetically, and people will be listening to this on the internet, just a gentle exhortation to Christian friends who are Zionists and to other Messianic Jews who are Zionists, and of course I am a Zionist as well, but let's be careful not to idealize the state of Israel as if it was the kingdom of God on earth. Because if we do that, we will not be able to see clearly and not even be able to call our people to teshuvah in areas where perhaps we're not acting all that well. When you idealize a person, a group, a nation, when you ascribe to it a level of goodness that goes beyond reality, ultimately it doesn't do that group or nation or individual any favors at all. And so an exhortation not to allow our sense of loyalty to the nation of Israel to eclipse or to blind us to the fact that even to this date, centuries and centuries after the promises were made to Abraham and now reiterated to Jacob, that it's not quite there yet. But progress has been made despite what I just said, and that is a very important thing to keep in mind. You see, we're not looking for perfection. We're not imagining things are that are not, and yet at the same time, we don't indulge the opposite idea that no progress has been made. And you'll see how this all ties together in a little while. We recognize and appreciate the progress despite the fact that things are not as they should be or will be one day. We allow ourselves to be thankful for the good that is and not to remain blasé or miserable even because of what isn't yet. Keep that in mind. I'd like to go to another illustration of this same basic point, and it's from our Besorah portion. And here you have this very numinous passage, very ethereal, very way out, really, where you have Yeshua driven into the wilderness, and the evil one appears to him and tests him. And in the language, the original language, to test and to tempt mean they're the same word. Perazo is the word in Greek. It's the same basic idea, to test and to tempt. And so one of the three temptations goes this way. Hasatan led him up to a high place and showed him in an instant all the kingdoms of the world. And he said to him, I will give you all their authority and splendor. It has been given to me, and I can give it to anyone I want to. If you worship me, it will be yours. You can imagine the conversation continuing. Yeshua, why go through the trouble of dying? Worship me, and I will give you what you want. Think of it, you can prevent the Vietnam War. You can prevent World War I and World War II. Just worship me and speed up the whole process, and you can have it all. But of course, Yeshua answered, It is written, worship the Lord your God and serve him only. He knew that first had to come his suffering. First had to come making atonement. First he had to, by that atonement, give an example of what love really looks like. When you love other people, you're willing to help them even though it may cost you. And here we have the quintessential example of that reality. Here you have us having turned away from God's ways and Yeshua taking the hit for us by becoming the highest expression of that whole system of sacrifices in the temple. And it wasn't just an act, it was a reality, the essence of which we understand, the mechanics of which we don't. How it works, we don't understand all that. But he knew he couldn't hurry the process. It had to be what it is. Now, even today, the kingdom of God has not come in its fullness. A lot of people in the first century thought that it was just going to come real quickly. Well, it hasn't happened that way. And so we're left with the same concept, this same idea that we're thankful for what is, not just miserable about what isn't yet. Is that getting through? Are you getting that at all here? It's really quite important. You see, the kingdom of God has made progress. The world is a much better place, Yeshua having come, his community having developed. And I find it unfortunate and unfair that the prevailing mentality among so many people is that the community of Yeshua has been a big problem for the world. I want to tell you, it is simply not true in a relative sense. We know about the Crusades. We get all that. But do we know about the 2,000 hospitals that were built by the Benedictine monks during the Middle Ages? Count them, 2,000. Believe me, others were not doing that. And so we celebrate that which is, though it's not complete, though it's not perfect, whether we're talking about the promises made to Jacob and how even today Israel is not everything it should be, but we celebrate what is. And similarly, Yeshua giving himself, initiating this incredible period of history when people are learning about him. Not perfect, but we celebrate what is. Now, I'd like to consider us, our lives. Hakeret HaTov. It's the term for gratitude. And it is the term which can be translated just recognizing the good. Recognizing good. Hakeret HaTov. Recognizing the good. Gratitude means recognizing the good and not focusing on that which is lacking. We think about Messianic Judaism. Perfect? No, certainly not. You know, you have people calling themselves rabbis who never even went to school. They put out a shingle and they're rabbis. I mean, we can point to lots of immaturities and lots of things. But I want to tell you something. I am thrilled about Messianic Judaism. In all of its imperfection and immaturity, I want to tell you that progress is being made. And there is a recognizable community of Jewish people who embrace Yeshua and still want to be Jews. And this is a phenomenal thing and something to celebrate. You celebrate it with me? It's an amazing thing. Congregation Ruach Israel. Perfect? Nah. We're still Boston's best-kept secret. A lot of people don't know about us at all. Are there hundreds of Jewish people from the city flocking to us on Saturday morning? No, not yet. We're working on it. But that's the point. We're working on it. And instead of focusing on the things which are not what we would like, the things that you don't like, the things this, the things that, the imperfections, the lack of this, the lack of that. We don't focus on that. It's Thanksgiving. And we say, we are grateful. We're grateful that we exist and that we've made it this far, and we're doing darn well. Again, are perfections imperfections? Sure, they're imperfections. We know about them. But we're making real progress. Now, let me conclude by talking about your life and mine. Because I'll bet you're like me, and you want to be a happy person. Anyone want to be an unhappy person? I'm just kind of curious. You want to be a happy person. Well, I'm going to give you a little something to think about, and there are two blanks in the sentence. And it goes like this. I may not have blank, but I'm thankful I've got blank. Want to say it just for fun? Let's say it together. I may not have blank, but I'm thankful I've got blank. I may not have good eyesight. I have horrible eyesight, legally blind. But I have one terrific family. I may not have lots of money, but I got a terrific 100-year-old silver flute. Because this is a choice. You can either live with a preoccupation about what hasn't happened yet, whether we're talking about Jacob, whether we're talking about whatever, or whether we're talking about something in our individual's life, you could live there, or you can say, yeah, but I've got such and such. Fact of the matter is, progress isn't always easy to find, but when we look for it, and if we choose to be thankful when we find it, this makes us happy. So be happy, and happy Thanksgiving to all. Shabbat Shalom, everyone.
Our God, may the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, may the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. In the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel. In the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel. And may your descendants and the descendants of your people Israel be those. Know your name and study your Torah for Messiah.